The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
Now, this is Winners and Sinners, when we look back at the week that was with a few twists. And we're delighted to be joined by Off the Ball's Ger Gilroy and freelance journalist Niamh O'Reilly. Niamh, I'm going to kick off with you first. What is your winner of the week?
My winner is the honesty of young children. I absolutely love the way they just have this ability to cut through the bull and just see things as they are and call things as they are.
For better or for worse.
But the older my kids get, the more I am sort of loving this phase, because I know it's ending really soon. But they have this uncanny ability to just humble you so quickly, mortify you, but also be really profound. My six-year-old the other day, he got a new teddy. We were at Emerald Park and of course we got stung in the gift shop, had to get him a new teddy, and we got home and he was sort of showing his teddy around his room, which was really sweet. And I was sort of at the door listening in because it was a really cute little moment. And he was showing his teddy his favourite thing in his room, which is a Tony box. And for those who don't know what that is, it's an audio player. It plays books for kids. It's brilliant. Yeah, okay. He loves it. So he was explaining what this was to his teddy and he just goes, "It's like when a grown-up is reading you a story, except they never get bored." And my heart at the door, I was like,
or fall asleep.
Oh. Or yeah, because you know sometimes when you're a parent and you have young kids and they still like stories at bedtime, which my six-year-old does, like some nights he'd want maybe three or four, and you sort of say,
and you're exhausted
and I'm just tired and I'm like, can we just do
and
one
you've read them
tonight?
All, you know what's going to happen.
You, can really, yeah. You don't really read them, you
I
recite
can
them
quote Room on the Broom verbatim for you now. Yeah. But I won't. So I felt so guilty, but I just thought, like, it was so astute of him, the way he described it.
Out of the mouth of babes.
And so profound and humbling. And I was like, oh, wowza, that was a good one. But like equally tomorrow now when we go swimming, like if I miss a bit on my legs, he'll say, "Mummy, your legs are very spiky today." You know, if I miss a bit shaving or whatever. Or like if we're in a queue somewhere and there's a bald person, you know, he'll go, "Mummy, that man is bald."
Oh,
and the man will have heard, the queue will have heard, the whole shop will have heard. So like they just have this... They're not saying these things with any sort of nasty intent.
No.
They're just very unfiltered and they have this lovely, very just black and white kind of view of the world that I really like. There's nothing nasty behind anything young kids say, but it's very truthful.
Although sometimes, like I can remember,
hurt.
I remember my eldest when he was about four or five being in a restaurant and a family came in and they had a baby and the baby did have a very big head. And he just said
just
at the top
that.
Of his voice, "That baby has the biggest head I've ever seen."
Like, have you ever had to bring your toddler into the stall, which everyone has, to the bathroom with you? Sometimes you've no choice when they're like two or something and, you know, they will make comments on your butt and whatever
are
else.
Are you doing a number one or a number two?
Why is your wee wee orange, Mummy? I got asked that once, you know, and the top of their voice. But you know what, I just think it's so funny and I love it.
Where do we lose that?
That's what I'm you see, my eldest is nine and he would be more
measured. We do, though,
measured.
Need to lose it, because if we were doing that
going
now,
around asking what colour your urine is,
we were saying
big
that
trouble.
Man is bald.
Do you know what I mean?
That
would not be
appropriate. But it's just funny to watch the difference in the two ages. Like my 9 year old is getting very sort of, he knows that you can't, not that you can't say certain things, but you say things in certain ways.
Mm.
Whereas my six-year-old is just like,
all
he sees
there.
A bald person, he's going to tell everyone in
I
the shop that
I came
a bald
home
person.
Once to my house and he's now 20, but I think he was about six and I had gotten my eyebrows tinted and it was not a good job. They were like, I was like one of the Gallagher brothers.
Fracture,
do you know what I mean? It really wasn't good. And I came in and he took one look at me and he burst into tears and said, "Mummy, I hate your new clown face," like this, right? And I then burst into tears because I knew it was awful as well.
Oh.
But part of me, like no one else
would have told you
if
that.
If I had said to anyone, "My eyebrows are really awful," aren't they? Like, what
they
do
go,
you think?
"Oh, no, they're fine." This
yeah, they,
fine.
You know, you look good. Whereas he actually looked at me and started crying because I looked
so
bad and he hated it. So I don't know. Ger, you're saying very little.
Well, sorry, but we were at the airport on the way out. I'm just back from holidays and my wife had one of those cubicle stories from the cubicle next door is, "Why is your butt bald, Mummy?"
Yeah, oh my God. You just have have to laugh, you know.
And she managed not to laugh totally because it was about Emma. Yeah. I was like, that's why.
I think so.
I think we've all. What age do we think you have to outgrow it by?
I don't know. Like I said,
21's time enough, isn't it?
Some people never outgrow it.
Maybe they don't.
Those people who insist on telling you the truth no matter what.
No matter what.
You don't need to.
No,
you really don't.
Sometimes you have to sugarcoat things for people.
Or just maybe just zip it. You don't actually have to
or
say.
Or just be more diplomatic. Yeah. You know. Yeah.
Those people used to come up to me when I started in News Talk Breakfast and go, I really miss Ivan Yates. And you go, Dad, thanks you know what? You didn't need to tell me that. You know, you can think that, but you didn't need to actually say it to me.
Yeah. That's fair. That's the 6 year old kid, the 6 year old kid move. You also have a winner?
It's the World Cup. So this was one of those World Cups that I was like, oh, I'm definitely going to watch far less of this. There's too many teams. It's a bloated tournament. It's basically a monument to Trump and Gianni Infantino's greed. And some of the referees from Somalia were getting stopped. They were one stop short of Guantanamo Bay style treatment. Some of the players from countries that they're currently at war with or deporting people to or have called, you know, horrible people. And then the football starts and it's amazing. It's just like, I said on our show during the week that the sport is sports washing itself. And it actually is. Like, sports washing is the process of using sport to lie and cheat and steal your way into everybody's hearts and minds. And FIFA have managed to do it again. They're ripping fans off. There was a story in the New York Times about how some fans have managed to game the system and get half price tickets. They'd only paid €1,000 because they waited to the last minute.
Oh my God.
And this is just now, it has just become kind of common where you're like, oh, this is acceptable. The new acceptable is that it's $2,000 for a ticket to see your country play once every 4 years in a match that means so much to so many people. And yet the football has been amazing.
Amazing. And what I love about it is those stories of like the small nations that, you know, the Cape Verdes, the
outrageous stuff,
just like these countries that are so invested and the joy that they get from seeing their country even score a goal, like Curaçao against like just that joy. There's something beautiful about it. There really is.
We can't help ourselves as humans. We get sucked up with the story and the joy and the bits that we do love about all of this, the beautiful game. But it's not just about it's exactly as you say. It's small nations on a world stage having a moment and all of that, isn't it?
Yeah, I do think there's something elemental about football as well, where like, any kid in the world has a ball at some point, no matter how poor or how rich, you have at some point kicked something. And I think that binds us all together. And it's a really simple sport to understand, notwithstanding all the nonsense around VAR. And so it's very accessible for everybody. And once you add in nationalistic fervour on top of that and the rarity, because it's only every 4 years, again, they've added a load of more games. It is really intoxicating. And the fact that the games have been good, I think, is... just games accelerated.
Really have you been sucked
loads
in
of goals?
Sucked in at all, Niamh?
Not yet, but I think I definitely will.
Gains momentum.
I'm one of those people who I don't follow club football, but I always watch Ireland. I have done since I was a little girl. It's, you know, an emotional thing. I've great memories of Italia 90, you know. Ev was very small when that was on the telly. My parents going bananas, everything going up in the air, you know, when we scored and stuff. So I love the magic of the World Cup, and even though we're not in it, it is nice to find a little nation and back it. And of course, we've got, you know, isn't it Pico playing for Cape Verde? So
Lopez,
I'm 100% behind him, the only Irishman.
All
it's like
of
a movie.
Is,
like, it's, I love it.
They
so
may,
I can't
they
wait
may
to
make
see.
A movie of this.
I would
I think
not be
sure.
Surprised. They made a movie of Eddie the Eagle. Like, Pico's story is exactly the type of thing that gets the Hollywood treatment.
And it is absolutely wonderful. Look, we're going to have to pause for just a moment. We're going to go for the news to Bernie. It's 6:30.
Okay, you're listening to Winners and Sinners. Ger Gilroy and Niamh O'Reilly are still with us. Ger, let's start with your sinner of the week.
So I got home. I'm in work between 20 past 6, quarter to 7 every morning. First day back at work on Monday and driving through the streets and they were filthy. There was like this deluge of crap everywhere. And I was like, oh, it's the seagulls. Because they'd opened up all the rubbish and I was like, oh, we should just cull the seagulls. That's the answer to that. And then I was thinking about it for 5 minutes. I was like, hang on, just back from Spain where the weather is much better and the streets were clean, why was that? It was like, oh, they have public bins where everybody just drops down these massive bins. You press the lever with your foot, the huge lid opens, you break it into your 5 or 6 different categories and there was no seagull problem. And it's not a seagull problem, it's a rubbish problem. But Ballybock was gross, like horrific, right? And so... I mean, maybe it's problem. Maybe the same problems on the south side and the richer areas. I'm not sure, but like we're going to get a wise litter problem, and it was the same down Dorset Street. But the north inner city really needs help. Like, wasn't it the ambassador from America was like, the city needs a power wash. The city needs some good quality bins. Maybe we could start with that.
I would be a huge believer in us having municipal bins, but to have municipal bins, you have to pay rates. You have to pay something towards that. And that's why we don't have them. That's why we have private providers, because people didn't pay those rates. Was it the 70s the rates were cancelled in initially, Shane?
Well, rates were cancelled in 77. And then obviously, but the council continued to collect our bins for years in Dublin. But then there was the protest led by certain parties against paying bin charges. And rightly or wrongly, and maybe in hindsight wrongly, decision was taken to outsource it to the private sector because they couldn't collect.
That happened, it changed everything, because the private providers were collecting it and the bins were all reduced around the place because we didn't want people dumping. We wanted them to use their private things. And that's exactly, and it's funny, you mentioned that the bin charges, I remember the no bin charges. We talked earlier on the show today about the issue about conserving water being a feature now. Uisgeirin have asked us to conserve water. Those things are linked to the fact that we don't have a water charge as well. And I'm not saying that I particularly want to pay a bin charge, or I already do pay a bin charge. I pay it to a private company. But, you know, who wants to pay for bins or water? Nobody. But these things have to function. And I'm completely with you. If we had those big municipal bins that I see every single time I'm in Spain, and they're so big, you never look into them, only they're empty. They have such capacity.
And they get emptied every day.
You're exactly right.
I do think that there must be some way for us to bridge the gap between the system we have and the system they have there. So we've well established the DESH school idea, where there are certain areas that need help with certain things for a period of time until they become self-supporting. Can we not just decide that there are black spots at the minute, we're going to get in there short term, fix those, whatever the moral hazard is of like one street over they're paying for their bins and they're not there. It's like, yeah, tough luck. This is just a really bad area. We're going to fix this for a period of time. And then we're going to have a conversation about everybody paying a little bit.
And the problem, Ger, is you've got one street with those municipal bins. What you will get is people from other areas going to there. And that this is Ireland. This is what's going to happen.
Enough,
and dumping their stuff.
People driving 15 miles to drop their rubbish.
You will totally get that. I'm not
arguing the point.
No, I know you weren't.
You.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
better than them fly tipping, though. Look, I accept that, right? But is that not better than if we empty them every day, the streets will be cleaner.
Yeah.
That improves everybody's general
sense. By the way,
we should
say, like, there are men and women in Dublin City Council who go out every day, and I think it's 24 hours cleaning our streets. I mean, it's a really difficult job, and they do it. But
they're Sisyphus pushing the rock up the
they
hill.
They are, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And so let's have a conversation about it, yeah. at least, because we all think it's terrible.
Well, we have to end plastic bags, and that is happening, but it's happening way too slowly. We do need to get plastic bags. They just do not work.
We should also say there's two sort of sides to responsibility for litter. Of course, Dublin City Council, and I do think the municipal bins are a no-brainer. But anyway, I don't see them happening, but I think they're a no-brainer. That's one side of it, and the cleanup has to happen and has to be good and has to be efficient and all of that. But we also have to acknowledge, whether it is because, as you say, there are some people who need a bit of help or whatever, but there is individual responsibility. You see people walking around town just dumping their crap on the ground without a care and stepping over it and walking away without a backward glance. And I don't blame Dublin City Council for that. I blame the people who are actually dropping their litter.
I would agree. I do think, though, that like there is a tone set by the fact that the seagulls come down at 4 a.m. and open the plastic bags and suddenly the street's filthy.
Yeah.
So you don't notice that. You know,
What's it called? The broken
windows.
Yeah, broken window theory that if the place looks crap, you'll throw your crap there too.
Yeah. So look, why don't we fix the problem with that and then ramp up the charges for people who get caught littering. I don't know how many people actually have ever been prosecuted for littering. I suspect it's
small numbers. Handfuls. It does happen, but it's small numbers.
It is small numbers. Yeah. Niamh, your sinner for the week?
Oh, my sinner for the week. This is really getting my goat, lads. And I'm sure you have all seen it, even if at first you might not think you have. AI posters. They are everywhere. They are like for pub quizzes, church events, fundraisers, school plays, cafe menus. They are all going to ChatGPT or something similar and saying, do me up a poster or a flyer in a few seconds. And what is being churned out is this generic, it just looks like vomit on a virtual page. it is breaking sort of every rule of design. There's like too much text everywhere. It's all the same cartoonish font. The people look uncanny, valley sort of AI, Pixar style creations. And if there's animals in it, they look even weirder. They all have this very, very similar look about them. And they're awful. And you don't know what they're for. It's like a nightmare cartoon on a page. And I get that it's very easy and quick and simple to
and
do.
Cheap.
And cheap. And, you know, if you have a charity fundraiser, I mean, it's sort of a no-brainer. We'll just ask ChatGPT to make us a flyer. But they look just so awful. They are repulsive. And I think, look, okay, it might take a teeny bit longer, but you could go into something like Canva. I know there's loads of other programs. That's the only one I can think of at the moment, which is relatively free. And you could just put a little bit of human design and creativity into it and come out with something that's actually going to stand out amongst all of the AI posters and sludge that I keep seeing. And I hate the way this is just adding to AI sort of slop that we are all wading through all the time. Every second post on, you know, Instagram or any social media is it's AI generated or there's AI elements to it. And I just worry about like my kids' creativity. Like I could easily see them, you know, in a few years sitting down, having to do a project. And instead of, you know, dealing with a blank page and brainstorming and coming up with ideas, they'll just go on to ChatGPT or something and say, give me five ideas for X project.
They will. They totally
and
will.
I hate.
Will we reach the point where we've AI drawings done by our kids on the fridge door?
Oh, ugh, someone passed me a bucket. That makes me feel sick.
I didn't even put my own kids' drawings on the fridge door. So no. Those AI things are never going up.
I'm looking at when you. I wasn't aware of this. And I quickly Googled it. And it's Reddit Ireland. It's AI look, posters are really annoying.
And here's, oh, yeah. Here's another one.
Okay.
Oh, they all look the same. There's generally
look,
a lion.
It's the same
or,
yeah. sort of font. It's the same uncanny
that
valley.
The weird
people.
Thing is that it was supposed to not all look the same, but it all looks exactly
but
the same.
It's this computer like churning out the same rubbish.
I have
over
to
and
say,
over.
And I get accused of this from my own kids of not noticing. I didn't notice that was happening, and it's because I don't question things as AI enough, and I think I should because I am that idiot who goes, look at this, these people falling off a boat or whatever and, yeah. and landing on a dog or, you know, something. And my kids go,
that's AI.
That dog feeding the baby, that's so cute.
AI.
And I've gotten better. I now just laugh at them on my own. I don't share them with my children because I know that they're going to mock me for it. But I hadn't noticed this happening until you
but
have pointed
now
it out.
I've but pointed now it out I, to you, you can't yes. unsee it. So I'm sorry for pointing it out to you. But every time you see one, you're going to feel even more sicker than the last one
it
you saw.
It must be really galling for people who trained as graphic designers.
I would imagine.
And designers in general and people in advertising and all those skills that people have developed over courses of careers and academic study and all of that they
absolutely.
Are being replaced
and
by
so,
well,
a,
let's hope they're not. Let's hope,
bot.
I know.
Let's hope we can start a movement.
it's so easy. And like I'm holding my hands up here. Like it's not that I don't use AI and ChatGPT. I do. Not for posters, but I use it for everyday things that probably maybe I shouldn't, or it's the lazy option. Do you know what I mean? So it's very easy to go down that path.
I suspect
we are
trying to hold back the tide here.
Yeah, absolutely.
In this conversation
because
I think that, and I have said this before. I now fear AI more than I fear climate change because I think we have unleashed.
It's so hard to distinguish sometimes.
Some kind of genie from a bottle, and it's just now going everywhere, and we don't know
where
what the hell it's going to do next.
It'll help with climate change too. All the data centers using
electricity. That's true.
Every one of those terrible posters is actually helping
like
to burn the planet.
The
don't worry.
Environment. Yeah,
wasn't,
I know.
Wasn't Jerry Hutch's election poster? He had like an extra arm or something in it.
Maybe so. Yeah.
Random fingers.
It's easy and it's convenient and everyone can use it and it's tempting. It's very tempting. But I just think when you look at those awful looking posters and I think people will know what I'm talking, they will have come across them on Facebook or something for a pub quiz.
Do you remember when posters used to just be like a green or a yellow or an orange luminous page with a bit of black writing on it and someone had put like a star stamp or something?
Yeah.
Like they were really
at least a human did it and like
crap,
it was imperfectly perfect, you know?
Well, we think that now.
Yeah, but these are just
now that they're gone.
It's like nails down a chalkboard to me. I hate it. And like I said, I hate where it's going and just that lack of creativity.
Okay.
And I worry for my kids.
Okay, we're going to take a break there. We'll be back in a moment with Ger and Niamh.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
Five, four, three, two,
1-0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff.
Yes, it is the last part of the show, and you're very welcome back to it. And Niamh and Ger are still with us with Winners and Sinners. We'll come to you first, Ger. You're any other business?
So this is just the random humiliation of being a dog owner. I want you to, you know those giant inflatable things that they have at petrol stations?
Where that wing sock things.
They look kind of like almost anthropomorphically human, but they're not actually. Yeah. Yeah. So I want you to have that in mind. of a morning when we bring the dog to the beach, there is a council tractor and the dog chases the tractor and eventually the driver of the tractor gets pissed off and continues to drive and we're like, ah. It emerged over a period of time, the trial and error, the only way to get the dog back from chasing the tractor was to run the opposite direction, screaming at the top of your voice, doing that thing.
Gerard's currently waving his hands over his head like the windsock outside of car showrooms.
And she only comes if you actually, like my voice is still a little bit sore from this morning's episode.
You scream really loud.
So, and you're like,
so people are on the beach going, there's that Gerard right? Gilroy from Off the Ball. What is he? What's
having
he
an
doing?
Episode.
He's running around like
utter,
a lunatic.
Utter lunacy. Utter sheer lunacy, and you just do it because you love the dog and you really hope the dog doesn't get squished by the tractor.
So you running in the opposite direction, screeching and waving your arms over your head, stops the dog chasing the tractor, so the dog will then chase
us.
You.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you take a video of that and will you
absolutely
put it up on social
not.
Media?
So we can judge harshly.
Yeah, do you really look like this inflatable dude
it's
or not?
It's exactly the same as it. It's the only thing.
What breed is your dog?
It's a half mongrel collie. Right. We were told more whippet and lab, and then we got there and I was like, that's 100% collie. But anyway.
Oh, so quite intelligent.
And
sort of.
What do your too kids make of it when you're doing this? They must find this hilarious,
you know,
do they?
The kids who said, get a dog, we'll go walking with them, they tend not to be around when that happens because they've actually given up the walking of the dog thing. It's funny that they didn't follow through with their promises.
Who'd have thought, eh?
It's funny when you said about the kind of, you know, humiliation of dog owners. I thought you were going to talk about the fact that we will walk, and I do love dogs, with bags of our dog's poo in our hand as if...
Totally normal.
That's completely... We wouldn't walk with a bag of our own poo. Do you know what I mean? But we
let's
would,
hope not.
We'll do it for our dogs.
That's an OnlyFans thing.
We literally... It struck me recently seeing somebody walking with a really big bag of dog poo. I was thinking...
Yeah, that's some love.
You know, there was a time when that didn't happen and that was not a better time. I'm not suggesting that because that was when people just left their dog poo everywhere.
It was routine back in the 80s. Yeah. You just brought your dog for a walk and let
them
do their
business.
And for
some reason it went white on the street too. Do you remember that poos went white? I've no idea. I don't know what that was about. But nonetheless, it's all changed now. But I was thinking there was something that we were, the dog... Do we really own the dog or does the dog own us thinking.
True. Yeah.
So I just want to apologise to anybody who saw me in Dolly Mental this morning.
So that's, people are going, oh God, I thought
that was
really
what was going on.
If you do see
Ger. You actually have to make it look like you're in danger because otherwise the dog kind of smart enough to know.
You know what,
you're not in danger,
I really want to see this.
If you do see Ger,
what time
do
you go for your walk?
Yeah. Will you please send your videos to 087.
Put a GoPro on the dog and we'll get the dog's POV. Of you going like,
hey, look, that's my next Instagram.
Niamh, what's your any other business?
Well, I tell you, I feel really old today. And this new coffee shop, which apparently all the cool people know about, called Joe and the Juice, has opened down on Dawson Street, and I like completely out of the loop on this. Apparently, it's like
Joe and the Juice is opening up on Dawson Street.
Yeah. Shane Coleman, stop now. I know this is him pretending.
Oh, right. I thought you were cool all of a sudden. That's all right. I scrubbed that off the list. No, it's like all of these youngsters queuing up outside, taking selfies, going in. And I knew nothing about it. I went down because I was in town. I have a little mosey.
Because you are young and hip.
Oh, gee, I'm not. Like, I went, there was a queue firstly to get in. I was like, here, it's for coffee. No, thanks. And then out of curiosity, I Googled... like the menu, is it some like amazing coffee or something like that? They do kind of smoothies and stuff. And anyway, in the United States, it's like $12 for these drinks.
Coffee?
For like an iced matcha, soy, you know, all bits and bobs in it. And juices, you know. But it is just juice. Like it's orange juice mixed with, I don't know, pineapple or whatever, you know, concoctions they have. But the prices! Anyway, the queue was out the door. There was tunes going, banging away. It was like a nightclub in there. And I've never felt more old in my life.
It's all sort of pink, isn't it?
It's pink. It's lovely looking branding and stuff.
It's like the Barbie movie.
Kind of.
It's, yeah. Yeah. Just like Yeah, just like Barbie. And they were giving away loads of stuff, and it, like, all the cool people were in there taking
free
selfies.
Free drinks for the first 150 customers, apparently.
Okay, well, that's maybe why there was a big queue.
And a second mortgage for everyone after that.
Would you be interested? I don't know, I feel really old. I just love an independent coffee shop. I live out in Bray, and we've so many lovely, small, local, independent coffee shops, and I would much prefer them to this. This just looks like, I don't know, Scandinavian Starbucks. People, I'm sure, will text in and educate whether I'm right or wrong there. Do they do something special that other coffee shops don't? But I would just like a local, independent coffee shop any day of the week. They know me, I go in, they know my order, you know, it's a lovely
I know you're saying
vibe.
All the cool people are there, and I have nothing, and I also am unfamiliar with Joe and the Juice, although I'm slightly familiar with it, as I've seen it on Instagram, people talking about
it. Yeah, but I've never been in one.
It was founded in Copenhagen in 2002. It's grown to over 450 locations, including New York, Dubai, London, and now
these
Dublin.
These cool places, yeah.
But to me, when I see people going in there, I actually, believe it or not, don't think they're cool. I do think they're probably influencers or whatever they are. But to me, I think they're kind of... You're buying into something. You've been sold. You've been sold a pup in a way. I'm sure there's nothing wrong with that. I don't mean that they're coffee or the Sambos or whatever. But I mean, I think if you feel you have to spend 12 quid on a drink,
well, no, that was a dollars.
Kind
I don't
of
know
more
what,
fool yeah. you. Do you know? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think you're cooler not to do
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. I go around the corner to my local coffee shop. I get a vanilla latte for €4, and it's delicious.
That's very down with the people.
And
in
it's
fairness,
very down
vanilla
with
latte.
All right, comrade.
Oh my God.
Comrade Coleman over here.
Do you not drink coffee? Someone pop him getting a vanilla latte now later on.
He's the biggest foodie you'd ever meet in your life.
There you go. There you go.
Guilty as charged.
I do take your point. I don't know. Isn't
that the point about all brands? Isn't that what you just said there? More fool you if you're going to spend for the same thing, but it's vastly inflated in price. Wasn't that all luxury goods?
But
isn't
like,
that what
once upon a time that was me. Like, I would have been very excited about this, you know, hit, I would have bought into that whole thing. And I don't know, I feel old and cynical now where I'm just like, cue, no thanks. €12 for coffee, no
it
thanks.
It does, okay, just to be very whatever about it, but it does say something about society that some people's price point for a cup of coffee is huge and some people haven't a bean. You know what I mean?
It
says something, doesn't it, about society? Like, if you can just drop...
McWilliams has
know.
The latte index, doesn't he?
Where he does.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, though?
Yes, and I've just been shamed for my vanilla latte.
He's not in a position
That's
to shame
it now.
Anyone,
I'll never
Niamh.
Have another one.
brilliant stuff. Niamh O'Reilly and Ger Gilroy, thanks to both of you for coming into us. That's our lot for today, Ciara, this week.
It certainly is. Do stay tuned for Off the Ball. Come on, Scotland, this evening. And other than that, really, have a fantastic weekend.
Tuara agus tógabhachaí.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With Kia.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.